The Restoration and Empowerment for Silk Road Transition Center is a Black-led, Black-focused, and Black-serving charitable organization in the region of Peel. Rest Centers provides transitional housing support services to BIPOC youth experiencing or at risk of experiencing homelessness. In less than 10 years of operation, REST has established itself as an essential organization to the fight to end youth homelessness by supporting youth to change their stories, discover new possibilities, and shelter dignity. The guest featured in this episode has been made anonymous to protect their identity as they tell their story. Their name and voice have been changed to secure this anonymity, and any resemblance to these changes to actual persons, living or dead, is entirely coincidental. This podcast, Homelessness in Hiding, or Youth Between the Cracks, is an uncensored discussion of content that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Personal discretion is advised. Welcome to Homelessness in Hiding, or Youth Between the Cracks, a podcast about homelessness, youth homelessness, and issues of poverty in our communities, from the people right in the thick of it. You are listening to Youth Shelter's Emergency Response, a three-part mini-series that will uncover the truth of life inside a youth shelter in Peel, from both a service provider and youth perspective. We'll capture some of the rules, norms, and taboos that exist within the youth shelters to keep them comfortable, practical, and secure for residents and service providers. In the last episode, we heard the stories of three youth living inside Branting Youth Shelter in August of 2023. Before that, in part one, I interviewed frontline staff about their experiences as shelter service providers and all of the work that goes into running a shelter. I'm your host, Maya Moniz, and in this episode, the third and final part of the series, we're going to hear even more stories from the youth inside Branting Youth Shelter. We have three more youth to go, so we'll listen to their stories, learn their insights, and heed their calls to action. First is Jehos, a young international student with bright plans for his future. Jehos was pursuing an education in Canada when tragedy struck and he lost all his technology, which took away his means for school and work during the pandemic. Once his student residency ended, he was on his own. Yet, despite it all, Jehos is now on the rise. Hello. Well, first, how are you? How are you feeling about this?
I'm doing great. I'm having a nice hunch about it.
Well, I'm glad. My first question for you is, how old are you?
I am 21 years old.
How long have you been in the shelter?
I've been here for like 6 months now.
Your shelter experience here, has that been your first experience with homelessness, or did you have other experiences before coming to the shelter?
Yeah, actually, I was homeless for like 3 weeks before coming to the shelter.
So, how did you first come to experience homelessness?
So, I'm an international student. So, I was living and then going to school. So, I was going to part-time and then I had school tell on me. So, during the first winter of my stay here, I had to fully be on school because it was during COVID time. And I had to stop going to work and then continue on school, which was online. So I did that for 2 months. And then after that, I had one accident, but I was doing Uber Eats with a bike school. Mm-hmm. And then I lost my device that stopped working because I was studying online. Since after then, I didn't have work by that time. So since after then, I've been unable to help myself pay rent and stuff. So I lived on the street for like 3 weeks and then I called on the shelter and they directed me to here.
Wow, that's so kind of just literally out of nowhere. You went from stable to homeless. Wow, I'm sorry. Are you back in school or?
Yes, I was in school until last month. I finished my diploma.
Congratulations. Yeah. What goals do you have for the future? And right now, do you think they're currently possible?
Yes, absolutely. I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to start my own business and mostly online businesses. And I came from a long way to here and I have a lot of goals and ambitions. So right now my current goal is to get settled in the country and continue on focusing on my goals and
I'm believing you. You're gonna do well.
Thanks.
Once again, congrats on the diploma.
Thank you.
So you were completing your diploma actually while you were experiencing homelessness.
Yes.
Could you elaborate a little more on what that experience was like, balancing all those moving parts?
So, okay, first, before I got here, I was doing online classes, and I got here in Canada during COVID 2021. So by then it was not in person, so I have to do it online. I did it for 2 months, and then I lost my devices, like my was doing it on a tablet, right? And then it was like a winter day. I was doing Uber bike. That's the only job I got. That was my first job in Canada here. And then after, like, when that happened, I was like living on a hostel, paying like every night per night. So, and that was like just a few months of in Canada, right? So I was still doing my classes, and I called onto the school to ask them to hold my classes because I was not in a moment of attending classes, right? And then that happened for like 3 months. And then since I came to Canada, like alone, and I have no relatives, no family, no one, right? Doing everything by myself. So I was living on the street and trying to get something to eat and besides, like just trying to make a living, right? And then since after that, I had a friend of mine who I stayed with for like 2 months. And after that too, I had to move out. And then within that 2 months, I stayed with my friends. I was able to continue my classes, right? So I was getting progress and afterward. So, and then it was like last year, September, like 2022 September, that I started living on the street, right? From June, July, August, I was on the street. And then from August, September, I had to like call the school again for them to pause my schooling, right? So, but still I had to pay school debt and stuff. So I was trying to do cash jobs, like 2 jobs at the same time. So despite of me having place to live, it was, you know, a matter because one job after a job, and just 1 hour I'll be going to another job. So I did that for like 6 months and then paid half of my school debt. And then by then, yeah, I ended up coming in here. And then once I got here, like life was easier for me because it was, I was getting like food for free, and I'm not paying rent, I'm not getting bus pass and stuff. So, and I able to get like one job at the time while doing the school. And it was because of coming to stay here that gives me all these opportunities, right? So, I mean, I'm grateful for being here.
What was your first night like? Like, what was that experience for you?
It was very difficult, to be honest, because I've never been to a place like this before. So it was, it was very like unusual for me because I wasn't used to it, right? But because I do take drugs, like I smoke and that stuff, it was kind of like okay. But it took me like a long time. And then like the food and other stuff, it took me like 2 months to get used to the food. Like it was a like crazy moment because I got used to it when like the time I had nothing. Like I have no money, like I have nothing to spend, right? So I have no choice. And I tried, I remember like the first 2 to 3 months, I've like eat like the staffs, they don't see me to the kitchen because literally I just go there for like bus ticket and like juice and stuff, like fruits, right? But like after that, after 3 months, I was like, I have no choice. And I end up trying to eat it. And then now yeah, I can eat like most like anything. So, but like, I only eat halal food and stuff. So that's what makes it difficult for me, you know?
Would you say that that was the hardest transition from outside life, if you will, to shelter life? Or kind of, you know, like living on your own in any capacity to experiencing homelessness in the shelter? Was that the hardest transition, or is there something else that made it more difficult?
Absolutely. It was like getting a place to stay. I stayed for like more than a month, like, I mean, about 2 months. I can't count the days, right? But I can remember one time when my leg got swollen and all those kind of stuff, and I couldn't do nothing. I have no choice, right? Because I didn't think about, like, I knew about shelter and other stuff, right? But, you know, they say you have to go through what you go through, right? And I've been there, I've been through that. But like about the food, it's like that's not the most like difficult thing I've been through, right? Because like, you know, you see people outside living, you know, and then it's like they have no place, but like they have something to eat, right? But it's if you have a goal and then you're working on something, you want to achieve something, and then besides, you come from a long way and you're trying to achieve something that you don't think it's possible, right? So those are the crazy stuff that I'm going through. It's not on the outside, it's I'm battling in my mind. It's like I got to the country as a student, I have to try to get a PR, I have to try to get this. So these are the pauses that are difficult for me. It's not like living or like any other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because I fought through, like before I came here, you know, I came from a long way to here. So, and there are a lot of people who are like behind my back who I have to like take care of. So it's like, it's a lonely process for me, was, but not anymore since I got to the shelter course and then got a case manager and people helping me out through that process, which is truly grateful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just on that's what is the most difficult thing for me so far.
Do you have any, I guess, prospect of, or however you define it in terms of getting out of the shelter, like do you have any kind of idea for when that might be?
Yes, like I have a couple of plans. My goal is to try to get a job and save for like a month and a two or three to have a good budget and then go try to find a very affordable place to live in. Not fancy, but just affordable. Like right now, my goal is to have like a job experience because the goal is to apply for a PR. I don't have a PR, right? Because that's the goal. I'm a student. I don't have much accessibility right now, but I can have things like WhatsApps and any other funding from the government or any other thing, except I work for myself. So I want to get a status that will help me be able to access to loans, like requirements to WhatsApp and other stuff, right? Then I'll be able to further my studies and do the things that will help me get further on my goals. So after achieving that, my goal will be to find a work based on what I studied to get that job experience. And then once I get a job experience plus the school experience, I can use that to apply for PR. And then once I apply for PR, it will be much more easier for me. It will be like I'm achieving like half of that work done. So then I'll be able to have more opportunities.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like you say that you are almost ready to kind of start that plan, or do you still need, I guess, more time here?
I can tell you I am ready because like I said, I've graduated and then I don't have any more time because time doesn't flow, as we all know, right? So I'm still young and like the fact that I'm young, I want to do these things while I'm young and have the goals that I want and then help the people where I came from, right? So with that being said, like I am pretty much ready right now because all I need is to have the like a job and then work for like a couple of months and then yeah.
What do you want people to understand about not only youth homelessness but about like living in a youth shelter?
Okay, so it's life, right? So basically we are all not been blessed to have everything, right? Mm-hmm. So like some people are not privileged to what they have, right? Or what they've been blessed in life. Some people like have food three times a day, they have a place to stay, and they have access to everything they want. And some people have half of that, and some people don't even have anything of that. So it's like, if you understand life and then you understand where you are, because we are all like not the same. And then the fact that this person has and this one doesn't have, doesn't make like life a different place. We are all the same place. It's just that the way people think about it, and like most people think about homelessness like the thing as like something that's like cost or something that's like bad. I mean, it's not like, it's just that the people who are living there, they don't have the privilege to live somewhere else to also like have a fancy life, or you know what I mean? So it's like, it's all what you think about it, but most important, it's like we are all humans, and at the end of the day, it's like no one knows the future, right? You may see someone living in a shelter today, and tomorrow you see them living in a different place, right? And you may see the same transition with the people who have and don't have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then out here, it's like this here is like cool place, right? Because you see people like most places, you don't even have people who are helping those people like outside, right? See, most people living outside, they don't have anything to eat. And out here, all those things are provided. So it's really, really like an amazing support and a great thing that the community is doing.
Next is Rennie. Rennie fell into homelessness recently at the time of her interview, but that doesn't make her story any less important. After she and her mother fell in hard times and couldn't afford their Toronto rent, things spiraled down to the worst. Hi, Rennie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay. What about you?
I'm good. How are you feeling about this today?
Honestly, I'm pretty excited because I always wanted to be part of a podcast because I feel like podcasts are very more transparent and open versus interviews, they're most gated.
I hope that I can make all your dreams come true.
I hope so.
I have good reviews, I've been told. So.
Okay, five stars.
How old are you?
I am 23 years old.
And how long have you been in the shelter system?
It would be 2 months.
Have you been experiencing homelessness before your time in the shelter, or is this kind of your first interaction?
This would be my first interaction. My story, honestly, if I could describe it, it would be like a storybook with so many misendings, misbeginnings, and mismiddles. So it's kind of all over the place. But I would say it's basically started with eviction from my Toronto residence. My landlord, she didn't really like me and my mom in her facility anymore. I feel like she just got tired of us. So she wanted us out, because even when we were behind on like eviction and stuff like that, she would tell us like, oh, just write a letter and just like say, you're going to be behind and when you think you can catch up. And we would do that. And then she would just send a long letter with like 3-4 pages letting us know that, hey, you're behind on 1,000 this amount, or you're behind on 1,000 this amount, then if you don't pay it by a certain date, you're out of here. So I feel like this is the point where like she's had enough, and she just decided to let us know that it's time to wrap it up. She got sheriffs to our door, and the sheriff was like, hey, are you so-and-so? My mom said yes, and she's like, okay, 15 minutes, get what you need, and you're out of here. So 15 minutes, honestly, it really isn't enough time, because you're just waking up out of your sleep if you're sleeping, or you're just starting your day if you are. So it's more like, it kind of caught like me and my mom off surprise, because like she was making breakfast, I was like still sleeping, so I had to like wake up. Like it was just a wake up call, so I had to just pack my essentials. We had to get a lawyer last minute, and my mom called my sister, and I honestly understand why she did that, but at the same time, I didn't appreciate it, because the moment she told my sister, the blame shifted on me. Like, I was being called selfish, inconsiderate, and greedy, and all types of things, and all types of names, and stuff like that. And, yeah, so I didn't have no choice. I just had to go to her house, even though I heard that she didn't want anybody that was not working at her house to be there. So my stepdad had to, like, smooth things out. I got there. The moment we met her at her hair appointment, I just had a breakdown. And I want to be clear, the breakdown wasn't because I was being evicted. The breakdown was just basically from not being heard and not being listened to whatsoever. So when she came out of her hair appointment, halfway done, she looked at me like I was putting on a show. And I'm looking at her while I'm crying, and I'm just like, I know what you're thinking, but it's not one of those, like, I'm really crying out for help right now. Are you looking at me like disgust or whatever? So the hairstylist came in, she spoke to me, she put me in the basement and did my sister's hair. I just remained in neutral through the whole process. And then for some reason, she just decided to tell the hairstylist everything. And the blame got shifted from me to my mom. She finishes her hair appointment, we get in her car, and honestly, I'm feeling like me and her are having like a neutral understanding. Like, despite the phone call and, you know, the criticism, I'm thinking like at that moment, me and her are having an understanding because we've both been through stuff with our moms, and our relationship with our moms is like very similar in a type of way, but it's just, you know, how she was born in Jamaica and I was born here, that's the only difference. But what we've been through is very, very similar. So it's, I thought we did, and then the moment we got there and we started like going back and forth from Brampton to Toronto to get our stuff, and we finally got into her place, I feel like that's when everything took a turn. Like, it just went down from there to the point where, like, I started organizing my stuff there, found something old that mom was using, and her kids took it from me and dumped my stuff on the floor. And then my other personal belongings, they were definitely on the floor. They had an issue with me eating, using the washroom, sleeping. Like, every morning was something new. Like, just imagine, like, you're at your family's house and you're just sleeping, and every morning you have to hear 1 to 2 hour phone call about how you're lazy, how you're dirty, how you stink, how you're disgusting, how you're greedy, how you're this, how you're that. Like, they just criticize you every morning, and then the moment you get up and you go downstairs to actually eat breakfast, they're just smiling in your face as if nothing happened. So, like, I hated that, I really did, and that was like very draining on me. I didn't want to hear it. So my only option was like, okay, let me try and organize myself to get a job while I'm out here. I don't care if it's temporary or just 6 months in. Let's just get ourselves moving out the door and like get our life on track. So after all the pettiness that she's had her kids do to me and she did to me, she decided to not cut me a key, so I can leave the premises to look for job interviews and stuff. She cut my mom a key, and she told my mom that if there was ever a day I decided to leave the premises to look for a job or just do anything in general, she would lock me out and she would have her kids help take my stuff from the little guest room and throw it in the property and slam the door in my face and leave me there. She didn't care if it was cold or rainy, she just didn't care. There was parts where like she was starving me for like a week because I just got scared to eat their food and they were cooking, and she did not want to feed me whatsoever. So I went to buy my own food, my own groceries, and to cook. And when I was cooking my own food, my own thing, because they were complaining like on the clock about how I'm eating off their food and I'm drinking all their stuff and I don't even eat like that the way they're saying, and I bought my own stuff, I wake up the next morning, all my stuff is cleared out. All my food, like all my fiber bars, all my snacks, like it's cleared out. My juices are junk and put it in the recycling bin. Like, everything's gone. So I'm waking up now and it's just like, I don't have nothing to eat. I don't have nothing to drink. I don't have nothing because I touch something, you know, the kids will complain to their mom and say that, like, eating off all their food, eating off all their groceries. The disrespect just goes constantly. They buy food. Mom be at work, they don't leave nothing for me. They leave for my mom, knowing that she's a vegetarian. She don't eat meat like that. They'll leave it for her. My mom has to do the point where she has to sneak food, give me, have me hurry up and eat it. And then give her the empty plate to make it seem like she eats it. So this is like the finale. I've had enough. I'm just tired of being mistreated and disrespected in my sister's house, knowing that the eviction was even my fault. And I'm just tired of she sending her kids to disrespect me, smell my stuff, smell my clothes, and just blame me for everything when her kids are not the cleanest stone in the book whatsoever. So I stood up to her on a Sunday morning. You know, I had enough. She took it as disrespect and told me I had to get out of her house. She didn't care how I was getting there. She wanted me out. So I just did the last of my laundry at that property, finished it, packed it away, my mom booked an Uber for me to go to the nearest hospital so someone can find me a shelter there. I got in my Uber and the last thing she said to me was, "I know how much money you're getting. I'm a caseworker and I'ma always know how much money you get." She called me a regional B word and a fat B word. Like, she called me every name out the book. And next thing I know, I went from Mississauga family shelter to here. And now I'm really just trying to, like, find peace and survive, even though, like, a part of me is just like, I wasn't living in fear, but like just very scared to do certain things because everything that I've been through, just being at that house, like the trauma that I've been through, it's just an ongoing replay. So like there's times where, like, even if I get paid from OW, I'm really scared to spend it because I know the backlash is, it's like a broken record, it's playing on your head on repeat. So now I'm really just trying to survive and get my life together and, you know, just start my goals and see what's next for old Rennie.
Well, first I want to start by saying I'm so sorry that that is what you experienced. So many parts of that just sound so awful and unfair. When you were saying that, I think your sister's kids like ate all your food, but then they wouldn't feed you any of their own food. Like that whole family like refused to feed you, but then ate your food.
Yeah.
That literally makes no sense to me. Like, I don't understand what they were thinking. Kind of what upsets me about the situation is it almost sounds like your sister was weaponizing her kids against you. And that upsets me because even though the kids were like in the same house where, you know, like their family was like, they were evicted, they needed a place to stay, your sister begrudgingly, it seems, let you stay. I don't like that they were roped into the politics and stuff like that, because that's such a young age to be fighting your family's battles. Like, that seems, even if she had issues, like that seems immature.
It does. But the thing is, like, what the thing that hurts me the most is that she's put into their head that I'm mentally challenged or that I can't do anything for themselves. So I feel like when you tell your kids this one thing about their auntie, like, in their head, and you just stamp it in, they view you in a different light. They view you as like, okay, if my mom says this person's challenged and da da da, they view you in like, I don't know how I would describe it, but for those who get it, like, they just view you differently and they view you as like they're disgusted or disturbed because she'd be wanting me to have bond with them. And she's like, oh, why don't you go downstairs and like build a bond with them and hang out with them? And it's just like, I haven't seen them in so long, and they've really come over to my house when I was living at my other place. So the bonds are like once a month, once a year. And I'll be asking them about things that happened in like 9 months. And they only talk about something that happened 2-3 weeks ago. We don't have that bond like that. I've tried, it doesn't work. So I've come to the conclusion that when you implement things in kids' head and you stamp it in, that's what they're gonna go based off until they're older and their mind matures and then they understand it a little bit more.
That's a very astute observation. Like, I very much agree where, you know, you're gonna grow up and you're gonna believe what the adults tell you, because why would you? That's your mom, that's your dad, that's a trusted adult telling you what to do. But then kind of when you start living your own life and you develop your own faculties, you're like, you start looking back on the past and you're like, I don't think that experience was standard.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so for you, I truly wish that, you know, like your nephews?
Yeah, nephews and nieces, yeah.
I hope that they come to, you know, look back on this, like think more critically about it and, you know, come like talk to you, come try to get to know you and like try to build that connection with you. Or even if not, then, you know, I hope they can come around and like talk to you about like, hey, I understand now what happened and like this is how I feel about it. Like, I hope you can have that conversation in the future.
Yeah, one day possibly. Who knows at this point.
But for now, we take it one day at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in that note, I want to ask you something. So you've been here for about 2 months, you said.
Yes.
How do you feel about your shelter experience?
Honestly, if we're being quite honest, I feel like I got a wrong, like, reality of shelter. I feel like I really did, because when my mom was talking about it, because at the point where she's been in the shelter life, so what I heard was, you're not gonna get any sleep, you're gonna be fighting for your life to secure the stuff that you brought. Girls in the shelter are very mean and wicked, like they'll take your stuff and sell it, especially the girls that are very like heavily in drugs and overdosing, they don't have money to buy certain things, they'll take your stuff, sell it in order to get what they need to keep that level of, you know, substance for them to keep going to the day, basically stabilize them. Versus me experiencing it for myself, that was the mindset I walked in with. Like, I really felt like I was gonna have to fight for my life, fight for my stuff, and fight a couple girls for my money or like one of my underwears. But honestly, since I've been here, I don't really have to go through that stuff. Like, I've honestly, like, met this really cool person, and I feel like we've connected on a whole different level because we've been through these similar stories. I was able to bond, learn something new, build something new. Like, I even made my first lip gloss here, and I was able to, you know, have a support system that I've been wanting for so long. When I was younger, I was just scared to like get it because of the backlash and the criticism from my family. But honestly, shelter life has like, I'm not gonna stay here forever, but it's really been like the first step to like me healing and finding myself.
I'm really glad to hear that, honestly, especially about the friend that you've made. I've seen this friend around. You two very much are connected at the hip. And so I'm very glad that you've made that connection, and I hope that is one that will continue to last.
Even if I leave, I really hope it does. Like,
on the topic of leaving, because you did say, I don't want to be here forever. There's a line. what's a goal that you have for your future? And right now, do you think it's possible?
I think it's possible if it's in your mindset, if it's in your spirit, if it's something deep within you, I feel like you can, you know, make it come to pass, absolutely. But especially if you have a good support system, like the way this shelter has, I feel like you can overcome and oversee anything that you do. A goal that I have for myself, I have a lot of goals actually, but the two that I would say that's on my mind right now is to secure employment and to secure this thing that, you know, it's called housing, but for me, I'd call it like a breath of fresh air, like where I'm actually able to breathe, not just breathe under the trees and the sky and the good environment, like actually do that deep breath in, deep breath out. I can actually breathe. I don't gotta worry about the criticism, the judgment thing, that you did this, you did that. Like, I can actually breathe and set my own rules, set my own tone, set my own type of environment for myself, something that is not overbearing and pressuring and stressful. Like, it's where I can actually breathe and then just do the things I love, like go to work. I can do YouTube, get my YouTube back in process, start my own clothing brand, get sponsorships. Let's see, y'all know, go back to school for my fashion, be able to create clothes for top-notch celebrities and have my name attached to something that I really worked hard for. And if it's not clothes, it's probably gonna be lip glosses, because I truly did enjoy making them.
I have faith that you'll get there. I feel it from you, you know? Like, you have the personality for it, and you definitely work hard. I absolutely agree with you and believe you when you say that, like, having, like, stable, affordable, like, self-affirming housing is going to be a breath of fresh air, because, like, a lot of mental health professionals, like, have said that, like, you can't even begin to think about the next steps of life, you know, like, healing from trauma, processing trauma, even, you know, working towards like future goals and stuff without that sense of stability. And if you don't have that sense of quite literal physical stability, then, like, you know, you don't have the mental and emotional resources to even think about the future. And so I'm absolutely rooting for you in terms of you getting on the crack of employment and especially on the crack of finding things that will work for you in the future. You've spoken to this a bit already, but I want to know, what do you want people to understand about youth homelessness?
I want to say that everyone's perspective and viewpoint is different when it comes to homelessness, but I don't want people to really listen to the outside world when it comes to homelessness. I'm not saying you should go out and experience it for yourself, but I feel like you really should experience it for yourself and see if it's something like harsh the way people tell you to, because there's a million shelters out there and their curriculum is different, their timetable is different, their rules are different. So honestly, I'm not gonna sit here and say every shelter is the same. Some shelters are really, really different and really, really supportive. It's honestly an experience, I'd kind of say, like an open therapist, honestly.
Currently, do you feel as if the shelter system that you're in, that you have experience with, do you feel that it's doing enough to support you in terms of reaching your future goals? So for you, that's employment and then finding long-term housing. Do you think that those things are expressly achievable here, or do you think you need something to change in order for that to be more achievable?
I feel like something needs to be done. Like, there should be more opportunities to be done, because I'm gonna give you guys an example. So I really didn't think I was gonna be at this location for so long, because I felt like I'd gotten where I needed to be in order to get my foot out of this door and make it into the next one. I have applied for Peel Village housing, and everyone's been saying that it's a good opportunity to start your life, you know, get your mental health in order and your trauma in order. And honestly, I feel like this one kind of just put the lid on it itself, because they're saying that you need to be in a more crisis for them to look at you as somebody. And I feel like that's unfair, because we might not, like, there's some of us that are going through homelessness, and the homelessness is not even from drug abuse. It's not from our moms spinning the block to get a dime bag or whatever. Like, we've really have had, like, parents that are verbally abusive. It's verbal, physical, it still ends in abuse at the end of the day, and that's like mentally. So I feel like people who have not sustained any type of drug abuse are being overlooked, and we really shouldn't, because at the end of the day our goal is the same, and we're all trying to seek some type of independence and growth.
That's a very valid and solid critique. Like, I think there's definitely something to say about, you know, the people who have been able to make it to the other side and they've really bounced back and they're doing well. And then you have the people who maybe have just fallen into it and are really, really struggling. But then it sounds like you're speaking to perhaps a middle ground that exists where people aren't quite on the brink of the edge, but aren't quite perfect either, and they still need support, but they're kind of put on the back burner, it seems, because I mean, yeah, there are people who do need the support a little more pressing, but that doesn't mean that you don't still need the support. And so I guess it, to you, it sounds like there's a gap in the system where the people in the middle need help getting to the other side.
Before we get back to hearing more youth stories, I want to take a moment to touch base with you. If you're interested in joining the conversation, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube so we can hear your thoughts on today's episode, and you can let us know what you want to see in the future. REST provides a wide variety of services that center around shelter, living, healing, and growing. Our biggest flagship program is the Bridge of Hope, a socially innovative approach to preventing youth homelessness. In collaboration with our bridge builders, the landlords we work with to house and build the capacity of youth to live independently, the Bridge of Hope program provides youth with a sense of belonging that can only be found in a stable home. We are always looking for new bridge builders, so if you have an empty room in your house or an extra space to rent and are interested in housing youth in need, or if you want to otherwise volunteer with REST Centers, you can send an email to info@restcenters.org. That's info@restcenters.org to learn how you can get involved. If you want to stay in the loop about what REST is doing to help our community shelter dignity and support youth experiencing homelessness, you can get to know us on our LinkedIn or subscribe to the REST Center's newsletter for updates. And most importantly, if you are a youth in Peel experiencing or at risk of experiencing homelessness, we are here to help you. Give us a call at 905-863-1118 to get in touch. Now, back to the episode. Last is Naveen, a new refugee to Canada. He came here to escape prejudice from his home, but found himself struggling a lot more than he thought he would. Today, he shares his story to help others like him stay strong.
Hi, Nevin.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm actually good.
I'm good. How are you feeling about this?
It's really excited, and I really want to do two of these. I mean,
how old are you?
I'm 21.
And how long have you been at the shelter?
A couple of weeks, I mean.
Has this been like your full experience with homelessness, or have you been kind of around before you've ended up here?
Yeah, I was in Peter Center, downtown Toronto. I've been there like one day, and I just decided to come here. It's because I was, I'm young, and I heard about youth shelter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then I just decided to come here to have, I mean, you know, somewhere to sleep, I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah.
So you speak French?
Yeah, I speak French.
And I unfortunately don't speak French. But the fact that you speak French is very interesting to me. And it kind of makes me especially curious about how you've come to experience homelessness, because I'm not super duper duper keen on French, but it doesn't sound like you're speaking Quebecois.
No.
So now I really want to know, how have you come to experience homelessness in Canada?
First of all, I'm from Republic of Congo. Yeah, we usually speak French over there. French is my first language. And after that, I went to South Africa, Cape Town, and I've been studying over there. Yeah, I did IT as well in South Africa, for 1 year. After that, I did learn English in South Africa for 1 year. And I did do IT as well. So, basically, I did 2 years in South Africa, and I just decided to come in Canada because, I've been through a lot, and I decided, I just want to come to Canada, you know. Well, I went to South Africa. I've been through so a lot, and first of all, in South Africa, you're going to find a lot of criminality, discrimination, racist, xenophobia in South African Cape Town. Mm-hmm. And it's very dangerous. Over there, it's very dangerous. I didn't do anything wrong over there. One day, I was going to school. After school, I was about to go home. And then people just show up in front of me, asking me for a lot of things as well. My phone, money, necklace, all those things. They put gun on my head, and I was scared. And it was very scary for me. And I did decide, now I can't be here no more. I have to go. And I can't go back in my country, because in my country,
you don't have to get into the specifics of why you left the Republic of Congo.
Yeah.
You can't go back. Congo is not an option for you.
Sure. Okay, I decided I have to go, and I just came in Canada. I just did 1 month in Canada, only 1 month in Canada. I'm in Canada 1 month, and I started living in the shelter already 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 3 weeks already. In the shelter.
Okay. Mm. And so from first landing in Canada to when you started in the shelter, what was that experience?
When I arrived in Canada, I've been in Montreal. I spent 4 days in Montreal, and I was I can't be in Montreal, so I not speak English, but not really, but I'm struggling to speak English as well. And I was better for me to go to Toronto, because now in Toronto, you have a lot of opportunities, to have a job, you know what I mean? I wasn't comfortable in Montreal. I was let me just get a trip here. Then I just came here. I was damn, I don't know no one here, first of all. I don't know no one here. I was how can I survive in Toronto, man? My first night in Toronto was in downtown, 129 Peter Center. You're gonna find a lot of refugees over there. And my first night was over there. Mm-hmm. And the second day, I was I have to do some research to find a youth shelter. And so I did go in Dundas. I did go over there, and they suggest me, you're young, you're 21, better for you
to go to Brampton.
What's your experience in, like, between the shelter in Toronto versus Dundas versus here? What have you noticed here?
Here? It's good. I mean, you know, there are some hardworking, and I think I'm comfortable here. That is good, but sometimes the food is terrible. But still, life is good. Still, life is good. You know, a good vibe, and I did meet a lot of people here. You know what I mean? So yeah, and that's cool actually.
I'm glad though. So as you are very new to Canada, I want to know, what is a goal that you have for yourself right now?
Right now, I have to be independent, you know. I have to work to be able to be good, I mean, like, by myself, you know what I mean? Like,
so to be able to achieve the same kind of independence you had once in Congo and then even in Cape Town.
That's good.
Okay. Right now in life, do you think that's possible?
There's no. I mean, I got some support here. I got my caseworker. She's doing, like, she's helping me with my process. We are going through application to find a job. There's nothing is missing or not.
What is one thing you want people to know about being a newcomer in Canada?
The things that people must know about my life, about my struggling, all those things, like I'm kind of a motivation from people. You know what I mean? Like, when things that I'm going through, maybe one day, those things will help some people, like, to be strong, to be better tomorrow, in the future. You know what I mean? Like, for not giving up, for me, is a good motivation, like, people must know about my life, about my story, and then that thing's gonna make them strong.
It's an easy misconception to assume that everyone in a shelter is there because they don't want to try at life, but that couldn't be farther from the truth. Many youth in the shelter, many youth experiencing homelessness in general, are not in this situation by their own volition. Many of them were dealt bad hands in this game of life. Many of them had parents or guardians act directly against their best interests. Many of them had parents or guardians who themselves were dealt bad hands. We've learned through these stories that many youth experiencing homelessness still have dreams, ambitions, and goals for their future. They haven't given up on themselves, as they shouldn't. And neither should we. When it comes to the shelter itself, I noticed a bit of a theme among the conversations I had with some of the youth that day. It was never quite explicit, and out of respect for their boundaries, I chose not to probe where I could, but there's a lesson touted among them to not get mixed up with the wrong people, to have your wits about you, and to stay away from problem areas. Jeha said it best, "I don't underestimate the power of influence." It's important that young people continue to make decisions out of their own best interests. And it's a conversation that we at REST have a lot with our clients as well. This world is big and scary and complicated. And to have to go through all of that alone is unfathomable, to be honest. And so that's why it's important that we, as service providers, as adults, as people, take the time to look out for the youth who are on their own, because they're learning just like how we once were learning. And how we are still learning. So, where do we go from here? The youth shelter system is one in place to provide emergency response to youth on the brink of crisis, to bring them back to stability and help them start the next step. We've learned both the ways the system is beneficial and the ways it falls short, right from the people in the thick of it all. But the learning isn't over. Jehas, Rennie, and Naveen. Where do you want this discussion to go? What should I and our listeners tackle first?
People can do so many things to help people out there, right? From financial support to like assistance and like to a lot of stuff. But my main concerns are about drugs, right? I do take drugs, but don't get me wrong. As a youth, 15-year-old, 16-year-old, I have those friends here. And if you take drugs, like more than 2 or 3 drugs, what do you think will happen to them after 5 or like 10 years, right? So it's like all those kind of stuff, it's like not good, we all know it, right? But it's like the society is like academic and stuff like that. But as a youth, I think people need to help the youth understand that like not all drugs are good for them. I've seen a lot of kids here, like a lot of 15 or 14 year old, like they take any drugs that I don't even take. I don't underestimate the power of influence. So that's why my first 3 months being here with all the food problem and stuff, I wasn't associating with people out here. I was like mainly in my room and then going to work and stuff. Cause like people who have like influence that I don't wanna associate with myself. Like they say, we all know that they say, show me your friends and I will tell you who you are. So it's like your friends like defines you.
We should come together as a whole, because at the end of the day, if I bleed, you bleed, we all bleed the same blood, may not be the same like type, but at the end of the day, we do bleed. So I feel like we should come together, you know, and just, I don't know, just come together and just listen and be heard and put our ideas together and just spread the word, because they say a little goes a long way. And how these streets work, if you say one word, and as long as it sounds interesting and relatable to some, it will go a long way. Because people do listen when you give them something to listen to.
These days, I'm just looking for a job now. I want to make money. I don't want to be here sitting, eating, drinking, sleeping. No, it's not life for me. I'm a man, you know what I mean? I got siblings are looking up to me. I gotta work. I'm a man, you know?
That wraps up this episode of Homelessness in Hiding, Our Youth Between the Cracks, and the final part of Youth Shelter's emergency response. I would like to offer a special thanks to everyone involved in making this project a reality. Madeline Hewitt, Senior Manager of Residential Services, Crystal Groves, Youth Support Supervisor, Latoya Green, Youth Worker, and Abigail Frazier-Dillon, Complex Case Coordinator, all of whom from Our Place Peel. And most importantly, I would like to thank the youth who shared their voices. Connor, Rico, B, Jehas, Rennie, and Naveen. I hope I did justice to you all, and I wish all of you the best in your futures. If you're interested in supporting a cause tackling youth homelessness, I invite you to visit our website, restcenters.org. That's RESTCENTRES.org to learn more about our mission and how you can support the cause. If you found solace here, learned something new, or think we have something of value to offer, you can subscribe to the show so you'll never miss an episode. This is Maya Moniz, signing off. This podcast has been brought to you by Rest Centers through the special dedication of our peer support leader, Maya Moniz, our Director of Youth Engagement, Romaine Redman, and Rest's Executive Director and Founder, Dag McCoy. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are exclusively those of the hosts and guests involved and have no affiliation with the Restoration and Empowerment for Social Transition Center.